Welcome, everybody. Today, we are very happy to have Andrea Boom from École Polytechnique, and she will talk about Goldilocks modes in celestial safety. Please keep your microphones muted and only unmute if you want to ask questions. Andrea, the stage is yours.
Thank you, Olga, and thank you very much for the invitation. I hope you can hear me well, but if for some reason my sound goes down, then please shout at me. So I'm very happy to give this talk today about work that I've been doing together with Sabrina Pasterski, who has recently joined you, and then with a couple of other people on different papers. So there's an upcoming paper together with Laura Donnet. And then in first year, there were two papers with Emilia Trevisani, who is my postdoc at CPHD. And last August, another paper with my student, Diogo Pano. So the title of this talk is Goldilocks Mode in Celestial Safety. And this is mainly, so the second part of the title is mainly so that people know what this talk roughly will be about. But I could have chosen a different title, which will be the title of our upcoming paper. It's Goldilocks Mode and the three scattering bases. And there's a pun intended here. And if you don't know the reference, you can ask me later. But essentially, what I will be trying to convey to you is that we can discuss the infrared or soft physics of quantum gravity in asymptotically flat space in different bases. And each of these different bases manifests different properties. And there's one among them that makes very much manifest the symmetries. And so this is the hint towards Goldilocks. Okay, so let me start by making some basic motivational remarks. So I would like to view the gravitational S matrix as a hologram for quantum gravity in asymptotically flat spacetimes. And it's holographic in the sense that the initial and the final states are prepared in terms of data at the past and the future boundary. And for the purpose of this talk, I will mostly focus on massless scattering and restrict to four dimensions. There's a lot of subtleties, including issues with infrared divergences, but for the purpose of the talk, this is the setting that I'm going to focus on, and some features that let us make infrared divergences finite, namely by pressing them, will also show up in the course of this talk. Okay, so for massless particles, we have the initial states defined at the past null boundaries, prime minus. And then the final states will be prepared at future boundary, sprite plus. And these boundaries are most conveniently parameterized by the advanced time d, the retarded time u, and then the sphere. And most conveniently, for the purpose of this discussion, will be to use complex coordinates z and z bar to denote the sphere directions. So in such a scattering process, the asymptotic data can be described in different kinds of bases. And typically in quantum field theory scattering amplitudes, we're used to the momentum bases, where we use a plane wave expansion, but we could study different aspects of scattering in different bases. For example, if we take a Fourier transform to go to position space, there will be aspects of it that will become more manifest than in the momentum bases. And then we can also do another kind of transform that has gained a lot of attention in the last couple of years, which is a Mellin transform, where we now replace the energies by boost weights or Rindle energies delta. And the transform that corresponds to that is given by this integral along the energy, which with this particular weight factor that introduces the boost weight delta. And this will be one of the sort of main protagonists of this talk. And each of these different bases, the position, momentum, and the boost bases, will highlight different aspects of the infrared sector. So, for example, very useful has been the realization that when you Fourier transform between the momentum and the position bases, we understand that some universal properties of quantum field theory scattering amplitudes, which goes under the name of soft theorems, can actually be recast in terms of so-called memory effects. And in this sense, these more sort of maybe abstract sounding soft physics can be connected more closely to experiments. So they're potentially observational signatures that could be measured in the next couple of years or decades by gravitational wave experiments, for example. Now, these two corners, the memory effects and the soft theorems, are themselves related to another kind of universal infrared piece of physics, which is asymptotic symmetries. So these are an enhancement of the usual Poincaré symmetries of flat space-time or special relativity. And what I would like to argue in the course of this talk is that while the momentum basis is very suitable to talk about soft theorems, on the position basis very suitable to talk about memory effects, the Boost basis or the celestial basis will be very useful in identifying what the symmetries of quantum gravity are. So again, we do this integral transform over the energy to go from momentum to the Boost basis, and this takes our usual S-matrix elements in terms of the in and out momenta to so-called celestial amplitude. And this will have the feature that it transforms as a correlation function in a two-dimensional CFD, so it shares some properties with those, but has more exotic features in some specific aspects. And so these correlation functions with celestial amplitudes can be understood as correlators of operators that carry this Boost phase. And what has been very useful in doing this change of basis is that this new basis makes different kind of symmetries manifest. And somehow in hindsight, this Boost basis makes a very large number of symmetries manifest that is maybe more obscured in the usual momentum basis. And then moreover, while recasting our scattering physics in different bases might make different pieces of physics or structures of amplitudes, hidden symmetries, and other properties more manifest. On top of that, we can ask now, because we have objects that transform as correlation functions in a putative CFD, we can now ask, is there really a dual theory, maybe really a standard CFD, that contains or encodes the bulk physics of quantum gravity in asymptotic flat space? And this is this program that's now known as celestial holography, which you've all heard about because you have now a lot of celestial holography boosts going on at PI. And some of the questions that we have to answer in pushing this program forward is, first of all, where does this putative so-called celestial CFD live? Naturally, it would be at the boundary of asymptotic flat space. Do the symmetries match? What are even all the symmetries? Is this theory really a standard CFD, or is it a more exotic kind? Can we use the tools that we already have available in CFD to make progress in order to sort of fully develop it? Can we learn something about the bulk? And so on and so forth. Okay, so much for a little bit of motivation. Now, let me tell you what the plan of this talk is going to be. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about some basic features of these three scattering bases. Then we'll go to the soft limit and the infrared physics. Then I will talk about something that I would like to call the celestial triangle. And then continue to talk about the symmetries that are made manifest in this new Boost or celestial basis, and talk about how we could understand memory effects in this context. And then I will focus on what I call Goldilocks modes, which are a particular kind of soft modes that encode information about subleading soft physics. And then I will end with some open questions and maybe some points for discussion. Maybe let me ask, are there any questions at this point about the motivation? And also, please feel free to interrupt me at any time. Okay, nothing controversial yet. Okay, so let me go back again to the S-matrix, our basic observable in quantum gravity in asymptotic flat space-time. In the momentum basis, we have this, we can describe massless particles in terms of an energy or scale omega, and the direction z and z bar. And epsilon here is a sign that is positive or negative, depending on whether we talk about outgoing or incoming states. And then we can define single particle states by acting with the appropriate creation operators on the vacuum. And then famously in the momentum basis, we have this energy momentum conserving delta function and many features of amplitudes and properties that one has understood makes heavy use of that. Now, if we change basis, this will no longer be manifest, and we have to deal with that. Now, the two bases that are one that I want to briefly touch upon, and then which is the Fourier transform to position basis, where we now just trade the energy for a null time coordinate. And then mostly I will focus on the Bellin transform that takes us to the Boole spaces and discuss the physics there. Okay. So one thing that we would like to set up is a dictionary between bulk and boundary. And one thing that we need in order to discuss the physics of this periodic celestial CFTs, we need boundary operators with which we can work. So I want to start by introducing some abstract three-dimensional space, the sphere, and then one of these elements, so I can choose the basis that I want to work with. And in order to define a boundary operator, we'll need three ingredients. One is a spin S bulk operator or hat, which, for example, for scalars, I can just use a plane wave for multi composition. Then second, I need suitable wave functions, which satisfy the free spin S equations of motion and transform under the appropriate bulk spin S and boundary representations of the quantum group. And then third, I need the suitable inner product that maps me from this bulk operator to a boundary operator. And this is done by computing the appropriate symplectic product for spin S objects. And these symplectic products are related to what I here denote by the inner product. So for example, the Klein-Gordon norm is related to the symplectic product in this manner here. And then once I have these three ingredients, I can construct a boundary operator in the following way. So I take my inner product of this bulk operator together with this wave function. And this inner product is essentially an integral over Cauchy slice. And if I want to go to the future or the past boundary, then I push the Cauchy slice to square plus or square minus. And these operators will carry a label epsilon here, which will distinguish between coming or outgoing modes. So for example, if I'm in the usual plane wave basis, I have these bulk operators expanded into plane waves and creation annihilation operators. I choose the Klein-Gordon inner product. I plug in as the wave functions another set of plane waves. Then my operators will just correspond to the creation or annihilation operators. And now I want to do something a bit less trivial, which is going to the Boole spaces, where then these operators will transform in the appropriate way under how the Poincaré group, or rather the Lorentz group, acts on the boundary. Okay, so this is so much about defining boundary operators. Now, let me talk a little bit about these three bases, so the position, the momentum, and the Boole spaces. Position bases, as already mentioned, are very convenient for talking about memory effects. So essentially, here we integrate over time the constraint equation dotted into the normal of Sprite. Then in the momentum basis, I can very conveniently describe the low energy physics, the universal factorization of amplitudes known as soft theorems. And then in the Boole spaces, I would like to argue that this is very suitable for making the symmetries manifest. And essentially, if you take a soft theorem and Mellin transform it, then it will turn into a two-dimensional water density for a symmetry. And I will discuss this a little bit in more detail. So this is just to motivate that these different pieces of infrared physics take a different form in these different bases and make different things manifest. Okay, so let me do this in a little bit more detail. So in the momentum basis, let's say we start with an endpoint scattering amplitude with hard particles with momentum pi from 1 to n. And then we also add a very low energy H boson, so let's say photon or graviton, with momentum k. It has energy omega, and q denotes a null vector that depends on the point that's parameterized in terms of point on the sphere. And then epsilons here are polarization vectors and tensors. And now if you attach this very low energy particle to the amplitude, then essentially when you attach it to incoming or outgoing states, there will be a pole in the amplitude coming from the propagator, so a pole in the energy. And so the first term in the low energy expansion will be this famous Weinberg soft pole. And then there are subleading terms in this expansion. And these subleading amplitudes can be expressed in terms of let's call it soft factor that acts on the remaining amplitude without the soft insertion. So for completeness, let me list what these soft factors are in QED for the leading and subleading soft theorems. So essentially, let's just focus on gravity. The leading piece, the leading soft factor of Weinberg just depends on the momentum of the particles. The subleading one, which was found by Frady and Andy, depends on the momentum and the angulament of the particles. And then there's also a sub-subleading soft factor. And in principle, we could go on and write down more expansions, but these will not be universal. There will be corrections. And moreover, at loop level, we'll also get corrections. So for example, in some nice recent work, Sen and collaborators have discussed one loop or L loop corrections that introduce logarithms in the soft expansion. And we'll also have to deal with those. Okay, so now let me make these statements in the boost basis. So here we integrate all the energies. So you can ask, okay, what does it now mean to take the energy to zero? Is there still a Jurassic factorization? Yes, there is. But now it's organized in terms of poles in the boost weight plane. And maybe the easiest way to see this is that in the Laurent expansion of the energies, to starting with a negative power and then positive powers, when we Mellin transform that and we do that up to some cutoff separating the UV and the IR, then we see explicitly that there are poles in the boost weights, starting at these values of delta. And so these are simple poles that encode the three-level soft factors. Now, we can also ask, what do these logs correspond to? Well, by using this identity here with derivatives with respect to the boost weight, we see that those would correspond to double poles. And those are the logs that arise at one loop. I could go to L loop order, and then those would be higher order poles that extract that factor in the soft expansion. Now, while only, let's say for gravity, only the leading and subleading are universal, we could imagine all the other poles or all the other terms in the soft expansion. And very interestingly, recently it has been shown that if you take all of these soft operators, they actually form an interesting symmetry algebra, and we'll get back to that a little later. Okay, so that was the momentum basis, the boost basis, and now let me just for completeness also briefly mention the position basis. So for every soft theorem, there should be a corresponding memory effect that comes from the expectation value of the operator appearing in the soft charge. And in the position basis, this is very nice because we can sort of have a semi-classical interpretation of the soft physics. And now these different powers of the energy turn into time derivative, retarded time derivatives of some step function. And these step functions are shifts in the metric or the gauge field at some order in the one of our expansion. And this order depends on this power of the energy in the soft expansion. And we can also talk about these logarithmic corrections to soft theorems, and they also have some interpretation in terms of long range interactions. Okay, so this was to motivate a little bit different kinds of bases.
Sorry, can you say more maybe about these log corrections and you know, memory effect? Because you're saying they're loop corrections. Does that mean? But I thought there was like they were related to some classical memory effects.
So. Yeah. So these come from loop corrections, but they can have classical manifestations. And in a series of papers by Ashok Sen, Alok Lada, and Vishwa Tsahu, and others, they show how you get a classical. Soft graviton theorem. So if you take multi-soft limits and you take into account that you have long-range interactions, then you actually can, so here you have, so this log omega starts with a one over u, but then there would be a log u over u squared. So you would get an expansion here in the position basis. And so they have shown in a series of papers how this, how the momentum basis logs and the position basis logs or one over u times logs come about. And it has to do with long range interactions. So these are tail memories. And they are potentially, I mean, in principle also measurable, but of course much, much smaller than the leading memory effects.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if it's related to what people in gravitational physics, you know, are always saying that if you look at gravitational, classical gravitational S matrix, you know, then in fact the Peeling theorem has to be modified and there's polylogarithm arising in the R expansion, that it's not enough to just have analytical radial expansion.
Mm-hmm. You mean whether this has been this discussion?
Yeah, exactly. Is there a connection between this discussion in the strong gravity literature, mathematical GR literature, and this one here?
I don't think the Peeling theorem shows up in this work by Sam.
No, but I mean the Peeling theorem is related to the fact that you have an analytic expansion in the bulk in R. That's essentially what it means. But what the gravity, you know, gravity people are saying is that you should have also, you know, polylogarithm, like logarithm of R appearing. So you cannot just have
There's you need log U's and log R's in this discussion. Yeah, this
exactly. Means... They naturally appear.
Yeah. Okay, I have not seen the discussion in the works by Sen, so I don't know whether. They have thought about the relation, and I'm not too familiar with that strong gravity literature, so I'm not sure I can say anything too useful on this.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So after this sort of motivation introduction of this different bases, what I would like to argue now that in the boost bases, symmetries become most manifest. And one thing that is maybe a bit annoying is that whenever we want to identify, say, a memory effect or an asymptotic symmetry, we typically, first of all, we have to choose boundary conditions, but then we also typically choose some gauge. And then depending on what gauge you choose, then the how you extract the memory effect from some subleading shift in a metric and how, let's say, the existence of overleading gauge transformation, whether they're really gauge transformation, that depends on the gauge choice. And of course, this is not something that's physical, so it would be better to have a basis-independent statement of what the physics is. And so a basis-independent statement would be that we have a symplectic pair of modes. So let me call them a Goldstone and a memory mode, or Goldstone and memory-like modes. And their insertion and the word identity for their insertions. And that would be a basis independent statement. And so we'd like to now identify the Goldstone modes and their corresponding symplectically paired memory modes. And then these give rise to two dimensional word identities or conservation laws. Okay, so let me state again the map that we're going to do now and the object that we're going to work with from now on, which is that starting from a massless scattering amplitude in momentum space, we perform a Mellin transform in the energy of all the external particles that takes us to a celestial amplitude, which takes the form of a correlation function in the two-dimensional theory on the sphere. Which comes about by taking correlators with operators that are labeled by these boost weights, delta. And sort of one important thing to highlight here is that in the usual momentum space amplitudes, we of course have manifest translation symmetry, and we've worked with that for a very long time. And now the nice thing that has gained a lot of sort of attention in the last couple of years is to make Lorentz symmetry manifest. And Lorentz symmetry, in the bulk of the spacetime, acts on the celestial sphere on which these celestial amplitudes are defined as a global conformal symmetry. So you look up in the yellow book, you find that there's an isomorphism between the proper autochronous Lorentz group as 1.3 and the 2D global conformal group, and you can replace the boosts and the rotations of the Lorentz group by the two-dimensional generators, the dilations, the translations, special conformal transformations and rotations, or equivalently by the global conformal generators L0, L plus minus 1, and the barred versions. And this already sets us up towards a mid-goal, which is to have a Virasoro symmetry in this two-dimensional city. So let's now work with the S-matrix in the boost basis to make 2D global conformal symmetry manifest. And as a spoiler alert to those who don't already know it, this will actually reveal much more symmetries than just the global conformal group. Okay, so now having set the stage, let me come back briefly to these two-dimensional operators, which now carry these boost weights. And now, instead of using plane waves as the wave functions, we use wave functions that transform in the proper way under the global conformal group. So these are called conformal primary wave functions. They're wave functions that depend on a bound point, which has to transform appropriately under Lorentz transformations, and the boundary point W and W bar, which transforms under global conformal transformations or Möbius transformations. And then in addition, if this wave function has a space domain index, we also have to do the proper transformations, Lorentz transformations of that. And then this expression here tells us that these conformal primary wave functions, which are, have a leg in the bulk and a leg on the boundary, transform on the boundary as two-dimensional conformal primaries with a conformal dimension delta and 2D spin J, which is identified with the 4D helicity here. And of course, they satisfy the spin S equations of motion. Okay, so much for the definition of conformal primary wave functions. And now if we plug them into this definition for these two-dimensional operators, these operators inherit the two-dimensional transformation properties under weights delta and spin J, and the plus minus is again for in and out states. Now, let me be a bit more explicit here. So conformal primary wave functions are gauge equivalent to Mellin transforms of plane waves. The plus minus here is a regulator that's introduced, which makes this interval convergent, and that perpetrates until this final expression of the conformal primary wave functions for a scalar. K here is again the momentum, omega the energy, and Q is this null vector, which I've parameterized in this way in terms of the sphere coordinates. And then once we have this scalar conformal primary wave functions, we can build spinning wave functions by dressing with the appropriate polarization vectors and tensors. Naturally, we could pick them to be derivatives with respect to the sphere coordinates of this null vector, but those don't transform with definite weights. So we have to do a little better. What we can do is we can add now a space-time dependent piece and construct space-time dependent polarization vectors, M and M bar, and those transform with definite conformal dimension and definite 2D spin. And I'm also gonna drop this normalization factor here for reasons that I can mention later. But now we have scalar conformal primary wave functions, we have the polarization vectors, and now we can build spinning conformal primary wave functions by dressing in the appropriate way. Okay? Now we have done all these Mellin transforms that introduce the boost weight, but what is actually this boost weight? So is it a real number? Is it an integer? Is it a complex number? Is it a free parameter? What's going on here? So you can show that the conformal primary wave functions for any spin here form a delta function normalizable basis, just like the plane waves to which they're gauge equivalent to, when the conformal dimension is fixed to lie in this range. So that's called the principal continuous series of the Lorentz group, and it means that the conformal dimension is complex. Besides those, we can act with another two-dimensional integral transform, which is called the shadow transform. That's essentially a smearing on the sphere, which shifts the weight of an operator and flips the spin in two dimensions. And those also form a good basis in the same range. But then, you go and you find that actually the asymptotic symmetries and also the celestial analog of soft characterizations of these celestial amplitudes actually happens when the conformal dimension is an integer for bosons or a half integer for fermions. And you can also show that you can relate those integer weights to this principal series weights. But now the question is, we have a complete basis here. Can we also have a complete basis there? What is the final best way to describe the operator content in the celestial CFD? What's the proper way to talk about the spectrum? And that's in part an open question, but at least we know that asymptotic symmetries and soft physics appear for operators with integer delta. Okay, maybe let me ask if there is a question at this point. If not, let me talk now about an important order of limits issue that one has to deal with in understanding how these bulk operators arise from wave functions via this smearing through the inner product. So if we are working with radiative finite energy modes, we're going to have operators responding to finite energy modes, those would be lying on the principal series. And via these integrals that I've discussed before, via this inner product, we can write operators on the boundary as these light ray integrals along retarded time in the large R limit. And inside this integral, we have these bulk operators, these half-hat operators, which I denote now by A hat and H hat for spin one and two. These, we can do a mode expansion into plane waves for these operators. Then we have e to the I, and then the radial coordinate will appear. So we have a rapidly oscillating phase, and we can use the saddle point approximation to determine the large R limit. And that saddle point approximation, so in here we'll have, e to the I k dot x. So in x, we'll have the space-time coordinate sets at bar, in k, we'll have the celestial sphere coordinates, ww bar. So the large R saddle point approximation will localize these coordinates. So the celestial sphere coordinates will get identified with the space-time coordinates. Now, if we want to now take the soft limit, there's another, an additional limit. And the question is, can you take the soft limit first, or do you have to take it after? What's the proper description here? So I think the proper way to dealing with this limit is that we first take the large R limit and then take soft or conformally soft limits. By conformally soft, I mean now taking delta to be in the integers, because that's what will correspond to the analog, the celestial analog of soft physics of particles. So when we do that, so we have this Mellin transform, we have the large R limit, we take that first, we can use the saddle point approximation, that then lands us on an expression that comes with some definite power of R. So this is for the scalar conformal primary wave function. And we have this localization of the W and the Z coordinates. And then we have some factor, it depends on the conformal dimension delta. Okay, now actually this prescription that we first take the large R limit and then the soft limit, that's already implicit in this relation between that gave us this equality between soft theorems and what identities. So already in the whole momentum space description, this was the limit that that people took. But we can nevertheless also keep track of the modes that we would not capture by this order of limits. And we will see that it actually, we can make sense of all of that by carefully keeping track about not exactly taking limits, but just approaching, for example, the conformal dimension that takes integer values, and also by keeping track of contact terms. Okay. Now, once we have understood how to go to large R, how to go to the boundary, we can now talk about what the special operators are that tell us about the asymptotic symmetries in the bulk. So that generates, so the 2D operators or 2D current that generates asymptotic symmetries in the bulk. So these operators, as I said before, are obtained via this inner product, which I also said is equal to the symplectic product. And the symplectic product or symplectic structure in the usual way of computing asymptotic symmetries, namely in the covariant phase space formalism, gives us the charge for the asymptotic symmetry. So what we'll find is that if you plug in here suitable pure gauge wave functions that have to do with large gauge and diffeomorphisms, then these two-dimensional operators that you get by this procedure are actually the soft charges of spontaneously broken asymptotic symmetries. So the pure gauge wave functions here are the following. So for a boost weight or a conformal dimension one in both gauge theory and gravity, they correspond to, you can show that these conformal primary wave functions that I've written down for you before are actually large gauge transformations and diffeomorphisms. That correspond to, well, U1 large gauge transformations and to BMS super translations. So maybe just for completeness, these are transformations that that are different on every point on the sphere. So for example, at Scribe, BMS Super Translations, they act independently or in a different way at every point. And I've shown here the translations in time, but with an arbitrary function of the angles. In this conformal basis, there is another pure gauge mode for spin 2. And actually, there are two modes. There's a mode with dimension 0, and then there's a shadow wave function with dimension 2. And those are all also pure diffeomorphisms. And the difference between the two is that one corresponds to so-called Mirasol superrotations, and the other one to Diffas 2 superrotations. And by looking at those a priori asymptotic, different asymptotic symmetry proposals for Einstein gravity at null infinity, if you do this from the celestial perspective, you can show that these are actually related by the two-dimensional shadow transform that I've mentioned before. So now we have talked about gauge theory and gravity, what the asymptotic symmetries are from the point of view of this conformal primary basis. These wave functions, when you plug them into this definition of the 2D operators, become the generators of the four-dimensional symmetry. And you can write down currents, conserved currents, that when you insert them in correlation functions, will give rise to factorization theorems and what identities. And this sort of summarizes what I just said for gauge theory, for gravity, where we have super translations and super rotations. And in particular, to highlight here, for super rotations, the dimension 2 operator that you can get for spin 2 has weights h bar being 2.0. So that's the weights of a stress tensor, which Anna and collaborators have found. And then you can also look at fermionic symmetries, and there's large supersymmetry transformations, and there's a corresponding entry here. Okay, so let me just put in equations what I just said. If we now have this Mellin transformed amplitude, and these amplitudes have poles at, in this case, dimension 1, and this amplitude will factorize into the amplitude without the extra soft insertion. And you can notice that actually this celestial version of the soft theorem now becomes a two-dimensional water than the before current. And this is the current from the previous table. Okay, so very nice. We have this four-dimensional soft theorems become two-dimensional water identities. That was for gauge theory. For gravity, something similar happens. Again, we have some the celestial analog of the soft factor multiplying the amplitude without the null conformally soft insertion, which gives us again a water identity for a current. And then for the stress tensor, we get the usual 2D water identity, which in part motivated this whole basis change in the first place. Okay, so now let me come to the corresponding memory modes that are symplectically paired with these Goldstone modes. So memory effect should have some shift in on the null boundary, some shift in the retarded or the advanced time coordinate. So you would expect a step function in the time coordinate to appear. And so we found a corresponding memory mode for the large gauge transformation and the BMS super translations some years ago, which involve indeed a step function in the right time coordinate. And if you want to fully satisfy the equations of motion, you will also have to add a shockwave on the light cone. So those were the memory wave functions corresponding to the electromagnetic and the gravitational displacement memory. And now we can also, we can check now explicitly that there is this canonical pairing. So we can compute the inner product or the symplectic product between these memory wave functions that I just written out and the Goldstone wave functions for large gauge and BMS super translation symmetry, and you find that indeed there are canonically paired, they give a delta function. Okay, so this we already knew, but now we can do this also for the memory mode that corresponds to super rotations. So that's the spin memory mode. So there we propose that you should take a mode that has dimension 2 or dimension 0. So there is a wave function and a shadow wave function. And these modes, how do they behave? So at large r, they behave in terms of the radial, in terms of the retarded time coordinate as 1 over the retarded time. And we know from the way the memory effect, the spin memory effect looks like, is we have an integral over retarded time, u, and then in here, this quantity NAB is called the Bondi-Neuse tensor, and it essentially corresponds to the retarded time derivative of a certain metric, angular metric component. And so what we need to understand is how we get a finite quantity from the way that the memory effect works. And so our prescription, so what we need to plug in here is something that goes like the time derivative of a delta function u. Then we get some nice finite integral here. And the way to do this is by taking these wave functions and the time derivatives, and then taking combinations of these ingoing and outgoing modes, which I recall have to do with this plus minus I epsilon prescription. So if I now take the Neuse tensor corresponding to the outgoing and corresponding to ingoing modes, and I take this combination, I indeed get a sort of regulated memory Neuse tensor, which indeed gives me the desired memory effect. And then I can check that these memory wave functions that I've just defined together with the Goldstone modes are indeed canonically paired. And then we can also, because there are four modes, there is a dimension two mode, a dimension two shadow mode, there's a dimension zero mode and a dimension zero shadow mode, so there are four modes. I can compute all these pairings. And one of them, for example, gives me a product, a two-point function that looks like this. And this particular mode, in a differently regulated way, has previously been called the dual stress tensor, because it also has the transformation properties, or the two-point function transformation properties of the stress tensor. So there are some off-diagonal modes in these pairings. Okay, so now let me talk a little bit about the sort of conformal structure of this.
Sorry, just a question, Andrea, you're going fast. So these modes, they have opposite dimension, right? Like they're on the positive axis now.
So these are like the pairing in this inner product is always with delta minus two. So if I have a wave function of dimension zero, then the delta
charges are one minus s and the other one are positive s, right? Correct?
Yes. So in here, yeah. So I have positive and negative spin pairings. Is that what you mean?
And then a question about this n plus minus n minus. Usually the memory is here it's a difference between sky plus and sky minus, right? Usually the memory it's a long sky between the beginning and the end of time. Can you comment? Or maybe this is what you're recommending, that you have to put both something at sky plus or sky minus?
Yeah, so here I am just focused on sky plus, and I've taken this combination of this I epsilon regulated modes.
And the plus and minus epsilon is just, okay, it refers to the incoming and outgoing modes on sky plus.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why we pick this admixture of in and out is because in the leading gauge theory and gravity case, this took a little bit of time to figure out there was actually an issue, because there was only in a conformal basis, there was only the dimension one Goldstone mode, and there was no symplectic partner a priori. And if you're careful, you find that there's actually a logarithmic mode, which has to do with this shockwave here. And then by taking this in and out combinations, we found the mode that sort of gives the missing partner of the Goldstone mode. And then if you use the same prescription, so here it was a bit more complicated because it would also involve shadows, which I've not written here, I've just written the simplest piece of that. And the same prescription gives us something sensible for the memory effect, for not only for the spin memory, but you will also see for the more subleading soft terms, for which there isn't really a good memory interpretation for the subleading and sub-subleading modes. I'm not sure this answered your question, but this is a prescription that gives.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Just
it's not very intuitive, maybe, but that's also because we are in this boost basis where we're not really having like cuts in U, mm-hmm. right? So that makes this intuitive picture a bit.
And when you were mentioning. Okay. Yeah, and then, I mean, I think, yeah, I was just looking, trying to understand the space-time picture, but it's clear. It's just, you know, an excitation localized at the cut U equals zero. And maybe a question about terminology. You mentioned shockwave, but usually shockwaves carry energy momentum tensor. So I think what you mean is more impulsive waves. That is ones which are, you know, purely solutions of Einstein gravity.
I mean, at book 6, for example. So for this.
Yeah, you mean impulsive wave, not shock waves. So,
okay.
They don't carry energy momentum, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're solutions of Einstein gravity.
Yes, and there are, yeah, here you can construct, yeah, write down exact solutions, yeah. But okay, I have books actually shock waves, I've been called shock waves, right? So it's that just that terminology that I'm using.
Well, there's a difference between the, in the null case, you can have you can have waves that, that carries energy momentum tensor or waves that do not,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Waves, so that's the one you're interested in, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, good. So now I see that I'm running a bit short in time. So let me just schematically say what how these different modes now fit into conformal multiplets in celestial CFD. So very basically in general CFDs, what we can say is that if we act with a primary operator that creates some state with weights h and h bar, which are related to the dimension of the spin this way, then we can ask where do we find descendants and when do descendants become primaries themselves. So this is done by acting with the Lorentz generators L minus one, and this should say L bar minus one. And in the 2D CFD, these are just given by acting with derivatives. And when the weights take special values, we actually find primary descendants. And if both these conditions for H and H bar are satisfied, we find a nested structure. So starting with a primary, I can get a primary descendant if I act with the W bar or the W derivatives. And then if I further act, then I can find another primary descendant. And actually the different corners in these celestial diamonds denote different soft physics. So the bottom corner here will give us knowledge about the soft charge of a spontaneous and broken asymmetric symmetry. The left and right corners give rise to the dimension where we find soft theorems. And then the top corners of symplectically paired diamonds give us knowledge about conformal five Coolidge dressings that render amplitudes infinite finite. So now there's three types of primary descendants in celestial CFD. The one that arises for the modes that I just discussed, which are asymptotic symmetries of four-dimensional space-time, which have this finite diamond-shaped diamond shape. Then there's a degenerate diamond, so when it degenerates to a line, which is given for a different kind of conformal dimension. And those are actually the Goldilocks modes that I want to talk about. Excuse me. And then there are further primary descendants, which naively would appear to be trivial because they're just polynomials. They come from wave functions that are polynomials. And so if I hit them with enough derivative, I actually get zero. But actually one should not just discard them as trivial because actually they play a role in getting this holomorphic symmetry algebras. Okay, so now let me just focus on these degenerate diamonds for the rest of the talk. So the first degenerate diamond in gauge theory is related to the subleading soft photon. It has a conformal multiplet of this form. We start with a dimension zero primary and we descend to a dimension two primary. So let me just focus on this top guy. It's a dimension zero wave function, and it has two important contributions here that I've highlighted in blue. The first comes about from doing this large R first and then conformally solve. And this piece is a contact term. And then in the other angular component, I have a non-contact term that grows with R, which naively we would exclude from an asymptotic symmetry analysis because it grows too fast. And actually, the explicit modes that appear in here are precisely the kernel that of the soft charge that was identified by Campilli and Lada in sort of their overleading gauge symmetry proposal. So this is perfectly fits with the literature, which is a general asymptotic symmetry approach. And this conformal basis, we can explicitly identify conformal primaries that give us those overleading gauge symmetries. Now, for the subsubleadings of graviton, a similar story follows. We start with a dimension minus one mode, and then we descend and find another primary after taking four derivatives. So let me just focus on the top guy. Similar story, again, we take large R first and then conformal dissolve. And the other component, the other angular component now has this much more growing in R mode, which is also perfectly consistent with the proposal by Cambini and Lala. So now, when we have this overleading gauge transformations, the first question is, are these actually gauge transformations? So are these terms here pure gauge? In the conformal primary basis, there are no more pure gauge modes than the ones that I have already discussed. So a priori answer is no. And this would now be a bit of a puzzle. But it has to do with the fact that we now pick the gauge in which there are no more goldstones. And soft terms don't care about the gauge, so there's no a priori tension for that. So now let me compute the charges and show that these modes make sense. So if I take first large R and then conformally soft, what I compute is, well, this operator that I showed you before, in the limit where the dimension goes to zero, that's for the subleadings of photon. So those are sphere integrals and integrals along the retarded time. If I do that, then I will land on an operator, which is just given by the creation and annihilation operators of the Mealy transformed mode operators. And if I insert now this operator in a selection amplitude, it will give me the subleadings of the photon theorem. So that's all perfectly consistent. And in hindsight, it says that the prescription that we took, first large R and then conformally soft, is indeed the good one. We can also keep track of the modes that appear when we first go conformally soft and then large R. These terms, because they come from this overleading components here, would naively diverge in R. So for the subleading of photon, I would get a charge that diverges in R. But fortunately, what it multiplies is actually the soft charge for the leadings of the photon theorem. And moreover, the structure of this divergent charge is actually such that we can renormalize the Fulson bracket product by exploiting an ambiguity in the covariant phase space formalism. And then at the end of the day, we get some finite charge also for these modes that would be neglected in the first large R and then conformally soft limit. So these conformal primary modes that are growing in R make perfect sense. And we can also talk about a similar story for gravity, which I've not done here, and also for supergravity. Now, one of the last things that I want to say is that we can find also the memory modes that are symplectically paired to the subleadings of photon and the subleadings of graviton. Now, as you go to more and more subleading modes, you will get more and more derivatives on these delta functions in time. And you can show that indeed, if you compute the pairing between the memory and the goldstone modes, you will find this delta function support. And then as before, because we have again four modes in each of those cases, we can compute the off-diagonal pairings. And this will give us proposals for off-diagonal levels for these more subleading soft particles. Okay, so maybe the last thing that I want to say about these Goldilocks modes is that we have these components that are overleading in R. And in the literature by Cambini and Lada, it was proposed that there's actually a gauge symmetry here. But here in the conformal basis, there is no gauge symmetry. Nevertheless, what we find is that if you take certain combinations of positive and negative spin descendants, namely at the place where they intersect at spin zero, so at the scalar case, we can actually recast these gauge and this vector and metric primaries as pure gauge modes. So again, this is perfectly consistent with the literature, and we now have a celestial CFT interpretation for these more subleading soft modes and their corresponding memory modes. Okay, so I have talked about these most leading Goldstone modes, which have to do with the bona fide asymptotic symmetries, BMS, supertranslations, superrotations, and then for the other gauge theory cases. I have now talked about these Goldilocks modes, which are not really Goldstones, but they have similar features, but come from sort of degenerate conformal multiplets. And now there's this semi-infinite tower, which one should also not discard, because this one has actually, if you include all of these conformally soft modes, you can find that the Kupferman soft operators form a closed algebra, and this has led to a lot of discussion in recent literature, including the question whether these are symmetries that persist beyond tree level. And I'm out of voice and also out of time, so let me just summarize. I've talked to you about celestial amplitudes, which are achieved by changing our basis to one where we have boost weights or Rindle energy. And this has made explicit many properties of the conformally soft sector. In particular, it has made symmetry aspects manifest. And let me just end with an incomplete list of open questions that are interesting and important to solve in order to make progress towards celestial holography. Well, let me stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the very interesting talk.